This hour, what happens when life mirrors art a little too closely? Take, for example, Maria Callas. An opera legend, she could command an audience with a single glance. But in private, she agonized over a love affair gone wrong and died all alone in a Paris apartment. Actress Angela Iannone can relate. In fact, Iannone says she has a lot in common with the original diva. They were both overweight as children, both had bad skin, and both brought passion to everything they touched. Iannone told Anne Strangechamps that playing Maria Callas on stage in Terence McNally's play Masterclass changed her life.
The moment that I heard that first note stretching out like liquid pain, I took a deep breath and said, "Oh, I know you."
After that must have come a lot of learning about her, adding more and more details and building up a picture of her life. Mm-hmm. What was she like as a personality?
Well, I think like every interesting person, and especially like every interesting woman, she recreated herself to do whatever she needed to do. What she was like to me is just an incredibly dedicated, passionate, vulnerable person. That's what I hear when I listen to her. I hear someone who's an artist in every sense of the word, and for whom nothing came easy. Nothing, ever, ever, ever.
But she had this divine voice. Did that at least come easily?
People didn't call her a divine voice. One of the first conductors that she ever worked with called her La Grande Vociaccia, which means the big ugly voice. According to operatic tradition of the time, and even now today, you can get online and get into hour-long arguments, people say the voice is not pretty. It is expressive, but it's not pretty. It's a voice that tells the story. It's a voice that hits you right in your heart, in your lungs, in your soul. But it isn't something that you could say, "Oh, isn't that pretty?"
She sounds like a strong and possibly uncomfortable person.
Well, I think she was. But I think that anyone who has strong opinions about how they want to do things is ultimately uncomfortable.
Don't a lot of the cliches about the temperamental operatic diva partly have their origin in Maria Callas, or at least didn't she contribute to many of them?
You know, you could take the things that were written about Callas, the uncomplimentary things, and you could stand them up next to uncomplimentary things that have been written about women since the beginning of time. I was just reading some Aristotle the other day, don't ask me why, and he's saying the same nasty things about women that are being said on the Senate floor. The thing that I have discovered in the course of my own career is that the minute you do something that someone else doesn't expect, or if you stand up for yourself in a way, you know, without smiling and saying, "Oh, I'm sorry," first, then you are temperamental, then you are difficult, and then people will just lie about what happens. Most of the stories that are associated with her didn't happen, but you can't tell people that because they are convinced that they know the truth.
So do you identify with her in this way also? Because
earlier, absolutely.
You said, you know, we have similar skin and low blood pressure, but sounds like there's a deeper sense of identification for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I've been labeled difficult and temperamental, and I've been told that my reactions to things are over the top, and I've been called a diva in a hurtful way.
Was playing her and playing this role, I don't know, either liberating or comforting in any way for you then, since sounds like you've gone through many of the sorts of things that she would have, the criticism, the yeah. anger, the misunderstandings.
Yeah, both of those things. Liberating in that I don't think you hear enough about women like that. And comforting in that every time that you hear a story that coincides with your own, you say, oh my God, I'm not alone. Thank you, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy, I'm not horrible. I'm one of a number of people who've had to face the same thing.
So tell me about the play. What happens during this masterclass?
She comes out and at the top of the show addresses the audience and says, here we are in a masterclass and I'm going to expect you to behave. Which, that's exactly what happens. People go, oh no, teacher is here. And then he introduces the first of a series of voice students. There is a pianist on stage who never says much, but he's a very important part of the show. And the first student comes on, and it's this lovely young woman who's an incredibly lovely young woman. She has a beautiful voice, and she hasn't done any thinking. She thinks she's going to open her mouth and be a big opera star, and that's going to... But she hasn't translated her aria. She doesn't know what it means in English. She hasn't looked at the music. She doesn't know what she's supposed to be doing with certain phrases. And she's dressed horribly. And Kallas takes her to task for every single one of those things. And it's like, look at you. Why would people watch you looking the way you do? And what does this word mean? What do you mean you don't know? Then the second student comes out, and he's got a glorious voice, and he's actually done some of his translation, but he thinks that he's just going to stand there and sing too. That he's not going to have to feel anything because he's got all the notes and isn't he wonderful. And she knocks him down a couple of pegs. Then he goes away and the third student comes on and she's a little different. She's ready to go. She's got an astonishing voice. She's dressed. She knows what everything means. But she thinks that she can be disrespectful. And that, the last student is an extremely painful student. There are many people who watched the show that felt that Kallas was unjust, that she tore this young woman apart simply because she could.
What did she say to her?
Oh, she tells her that she doesn't have it. This young woman is singing an aria from the opera, Verdi's opera, Macbeth, which is the story of Macbeth. And the part of Lady Macbeth is not easy, either on the operatic stage or in the theatrical arena. And there are a lot of people who think that it's a lot of teeth gnashing and, you know, we're going to go out and be this solid cast iron horrible person and that's all there is to it. And Kallas says, you can't do it that way. That's not all that's there. Look deeper, go deeper, find the other stuff. And the student turns on her and tells her, you're just jealous because you can't sing anymore, because your career is over, because you're washed up. Well, I don't have to sound like you in order to be a success. I don't even want to sound like you. I hate you. She actually tells her that. And so, and there are a lot of audience members who, you know, are sitting in their seat going, yeah, yeah, tell her off, tell her off. And a lot of critics who found that an extremely satisfying moment. So, you know, and the play comes to a close shortly after that episode. And she says, well, you know, you can say whatever you like. Ultimately, the job is to feel a little deeper, to sing a little better, to pay attention to what's written, and to make a difference.
I had one other question about Maria Kallas. I've read that you've said that even your family you think of as a gift from Maria Kallas.
Yes. Well, my husband played the tenor in the Madison production, so that was the first time that we met, was doing the show. And our daughter's name is Maria Divina, named after Kallas. So whether or not she becomes an opera singer, we'll see. But yeah, it's definitely a gift. She's been doing a lot of guiding of my life, I believe, sending me towards things. And every time that I think I can't take it anymore, I'll pull out one of her CDs and listen and go, yes, I can. Yes, I can. Thank you. Yes, I can.
Is there an excerpt that you could read or do for us?
Yes. This is during the first student, whose name is Sophie, and she makes Sophie cry because Sophie can't quite get it, and she thinks Kallas is being mean to her. And she says, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's one of those comments that students make when they don't want to deal with you. I don't even know what you're talking about. And Kallas responds to her and says, yes, you do. You just don't want to do it. Everyone understood what I was talking about when I was singing. They simply didn't want to listen. Too difficult, too painful, too controversial. I don't blame them. I did, but I don't now. Why deal with someone like me when you can have Tebaldi, or Sutherland or Sills. They said they didn't like my sound. That wasn't it. They didn't like my soul. To what? To something. You have a lovely voice, you know, a charming sound. It's much lovelier than mine ever was, and no one ever accused me or my voice of charm. That was my sister. She was the charming one, the pretty one, the one the boys wanted. Anyway, en tout cas, all that got her, wherever she is, I don't know, we don't speak, and got me where I am. Sometimes I think the whole world knows where that is, or was. And which is right now up here talking with you about your voice, your sound, who you are. Who are you? Sophie Di Palma, you've told us your name, but who are you? Tears will get you nowhere, darling. Not in the theater, not in real life, certainly not with me. No one cares how many nights I cried myself to sleep. I sang Norma better than anyone had in years, and I interpolated a high F at the end of the first act. That's all people cared about. When you're fat and ugly, and I'm not saying you're either of those things, you had better have a couple of high Fs you can interpolate into your life. No one cares about your damp pillow. Why should I? Did you care about mine? Did anyone? But that's another story. I can cry all I want to now. But you can't, Sophie Di Palma. You've got to sing for your supper. Sing for your salvation. Now, shall we try again?
A scene from Masterclass, a play by Terence McNally based on the real-life masterclasses Maria Callas conducted at Juilliard. Actress Angela Iannone spoke with Anne Strangchamps.